Prince died in 2016, and I still find myself referring to him in present tense. But I've noticed I'm not the only one. It's happened over and over again in the interviews for this podcast. For so many of us, even though Prince is physically gone, somehow it still feels like he's off in the studio working on music, and soon enough, when he's ready for us to have it, he'll resurface again, like he did throughout his four-decade career. I've had a hard time publicly delving into my grief. Oh, I've done a couple of interviews about what Prince meant to me, and I've written essays about his impact on my life. But I can't seem to let myself acknowledge how sad it makes me when I think about him being gone. My love for Prince is public and well known. It led me here to this role as host, but my grief for him, the loss I feel, is private. I like to love out loud. As soon as I find a new favorite book or TV show, I tell everyone I know. I have no problem sharing the details of a good face serum or a great restaurant. I hold hands in public and kiss while standing in line. But the misery I feel knowing Prince is gone is mine. I haven't really gone beyond the surface of my grief or spoken about it out loud with others. Not even with good friends like Mickey Cheek or Rashad Mobley, whom you met in a previous episode. Mickey works in human resources in Las Vegas. Rashad is a technical writer based in Washington, D.C., who also writes about sports. I chose them for this conversation because, like me, they have loved Prince since childhood. For Mickey, Prince is the only artist she collects memorabilia of, and Rashad once used the title of a Prince song, Sexy MF, as his online handle. So maybe now, in the company of trusted friends and fellow Prince Rogers Nelson fans, it's a good time to wade into the dark waters of mourning. This is The Prince Mixtape, and I'm your host, Nicole Perkins. This is our final episode of this season of the podcast. It'll be a little different as we listen to me and Mickey and Rashad talk about how Prince's death has affected us. In the song Comeback, Prince sings, "I don't have to say I miss you, because I think you already know." And I think there's a lot of truth to that. But maybe we can say it anyway. I miss you, Prince. How did you find out that Prince had died?
I had gotten emails with like the subject line about Prince, and I almost refused to delve further because I was afraid that that's what I was going to read. So I avoided it. I wouldn't click on any of the notifications or whatever because I didn't want that to be true. I remember just kind of saying, no, don't tell me that. No, don't tell me that that's what's happening. I couldn't run from it, but I tried really hard.
Rashad?
My mother-in-law lives in Minnesota, and she works right across from Paisley Park. And so we're chatting, and she says, something's going on over there. The ambulance is over there. I think I'm going to go check it out because people are gathering. Prince had to cancel a show in Atlanta because he was sick. And I remember thinking, I wonder what's going on. A month before that, he was at a Golden State basketball game. He looked really frail, really thin. And I remember thinking, something's going on, because I remember how Michael Jackson looked before he passed away. So when my mother-in-law said she had to go, then I started getting all these alerts. It was everywhere. And I remember telling my wife, I'm shutting down social media. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to read anything. And I didn't. And then my mother-in-law told me Prince died, and people are just coming up spontaneously right outside her job. It was sad. It was very sad. I was unexpectedly emotional because that's my childhood, you know? And at that point, Luther was gone. Michael was gone. Whitney was gone. And it's like my whole 80s was just completely gone. So it was very, very sad.
You talk about how emotional you were.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was younger and my parents listening to Marvin Gaye. And, you know, when Marvin Gaye died, I remember hearing stories about how people were just losing it about it, pulling their phones out of the wall back when, you know, landlines and everything was a thing. But like, you know, people having these very emotional reactions and angry reactions to his death. And I felt more emotional about Prince's death than I had about any celebrity before then. Like, I remember just being like really hurt by it.
When I found out, I was back home in Nashville and I was at my mom's house. When I'm at home, it's very much a Southern Black family where everybody needs your attention, so you can't be on your phone. You know, it's just very much like, Nikki, come talk to me. What you doing? You know, like just the idea of somebody being in a separate room someplace on a computer is just so foreign to my family. So I had not been paying attention to social media. Like, I didn't know what was going on. And my phone rang and it was my friend Danny. And he was like, are you okay? I just want to check in with you. It's like, what are you talking about? And he was like, you don't know? I said, no. What's going on?
CNN's live coverage of today's breaking news, the shocking death of an American music legend, Prince. He was 57 years old and had canceled several recent concerts due to illness. Investigators say he was found unresponsive today in an elevator at his mansion outside Minneapolis.
At that time, they were not officially declaring that it was Prince. They found a body at Paisley Park. And I was just like, oh, well, it's not Prince. Because it couldn't be, right? Like, it was just like, there's no way that Prince could die. Not in my lifetime. Not while I'm still on the planet. And so Danny was very apologetic to be like the first person to tell me. Got off the phone and I started looking it up. Of course, I went to Twitter. And everybody was just like, he's gone. He's gone. I was like, no, that's not right. And then the confirmation came out. I don't even remember the rest of that day. Because I was just like, no. Like, it was just like, no. I think I tweeted a single word, no, period. And then just like put my phone down and went away.
Shut down. Yeah.
Yeah. I could not believe it. But I too had a sense that something was happening with him. Denise Matthews, Vanity, had died in February of that year. And there was a performance where he broke down crying, talking about her. He said that he was going to release his memoir. And I remember thinking, oh, he's about to die. Because he had been so hesitant to put his life out there in any way beyond the music. Always hated interviews. But something about him announcing that he was going to do the memoir and then him crying when Vanity died. I was like, oh, he's getting his affairs in order. Like, he's doing something to, like, get ready to leave here. And I didn't tell anybody this because I was like, that's so morbid. But that's how I felt. I didn't know anything about the pain that he was in at the time or anything like that. Or that, you know, he was, you know, allegedly misusing pain medication. I knew that he had had some concerns about like his hips for a while. Performing in heels is just bad for you. Like, it's just bad.
Hips, feet.
Yes.
Like everything. Heels will mess up your entire lower body.
Yeah. So I knew about that, you know, and there was all these rumors about him not wanting to go get surgery for his hips because he was a Jehovah's Witness, and part of their faith, as I understand it, is that they don't allow blood transfusions. There are some medical restrictions involved in the faith, but those are rumors. I wasn't sure, you know, how true that was. So I don't remember what happened after, like, actually learning that he was gone. But I remember, like, maybe the next day or the day after, I was driving my mom around. We were running errands. My mom still likes to listen to the radio. So there was Prince tributes all on the radio.
Of course.
And I had to pull over because I started crying. Oh, no, I'm going to cry now.
That's okay.
And I just felt so stupid because it's like, I don't know this man. He did not know me from a can of paint, you know?
Wait, didn't he send you a tweet or an Instagram message one time?
He did. He did send me a tweet one time. And he typed out my name. Like, he said, Nicole, N-I-C-H-O-L-E. He spelled it correctly and everything. It's very exciting.
I was going to say, I'm sure he spelled it right.
But I don't know. I just felt stupid. Like, y'all knew. My friends know, like, how I feel about Prince. But I never shared that grief. And I remember, Rashad, talking to you about, like, I think you asked me if I was going to the Spike Lee block party and celebration mm-hmm. in the year after he had passed. And I was like, no, I don't want to be around anybody. Like, Even though it was a shared grief worldwide, it's still my grief. And I just could not imagine being in the middle of Darla Nikki and crying, you know, like in front of everybody, even though I'm sure there would have been plenty of other people crying. But it still just felt like he was mine. And I just did not want to share that with anybody. And even now, like, I feel it's too vulnerable to, like, admit how much he means to me through tears. Like, oh, yeah, I can host this podcast. I can write an essay. I can name my book after him. But I can't let you see me cry.
Because then you're a human person with human feelings. Oh, my gosh. Imagine that.
Boy.
Everybody's grief process is different. Sure, there were opportunities to grieve together with, you know, a community of fans, and that's great. But everybody's grief is different. And, you know, you process the way you process. You should feel entitled to that.
I don't even listen to his music the same. Like, I would listen to Prince almost daily. And then after he died, I could not. It was just, it was too hard. I remember one time I was listening to Adore, and that part at the very end, he's doing all the background and it sounds like angels. And he's like, "For all time, I am with you and you are with me." I just cried and cried and cried because I was just like, it sounds like a secret message now to his fans, you know?
And maybe it was. I mean, you know, like he connected with fans in a different way. Like when we were talking earlier just about, you know, having a connection with an artist for whatever reason you have. I feel like he knew what he was doing when he was making this music and garnering all these fans. There's probably plenty of secret messages in a lot of songs, or a lot of people who may interpret them as secret messages. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that either.
Okay. Give me two Prince songs that you would sing at karaoke.
So that's hard because, you know, I don't do the karaoke and I never would.
But, right. I know.
Little Red Corvette will be at the top of that list. But karaoke also is about commitment and crowd participation and stuff like that. So I feel like you have to do a song that everybody can get into. So I would probably pick something off of Purple Rain, like Let's Go Crazy. I Would Die For You. Something that, you know, everybody is on board with. That's assuming that I would sing karaoke, which... you guys know I would not.
Yes. Rashad.
Condition of the Heart.
Boy.
That's my favorite.
What? You can't do Condition of the Heart at karaoke.
I am not bound by your karaoke rules. Surely can.
All right.
Rashad got his own rules.
Right.
And Pink Cashmere, definitely. Yeah.
Why?
Because I can do extended falsetto.
Oh, what? Let me hear it. Nah, go ahead.
No.
Nah, you can't say, oh, I can do.
I didn't say I could. I'm saying in that venue, I could do an extended falsetto.
So that song choice is because it would give you the opportunity to do extended falsetto?
Yes. And I just like the words.
Okay.
I think we had a talk a little while ago about not shaming responses. And yet here I am. Here I am being shamed. Making you a call.
For me, if it was just like a regular, just a general kind of karaoke, I would do Raspberry Beret for the same reasons that Mickey mentioned. Like, you want something like crowd participation and get people hype, stuff like that. But if it was a Prince-themed karaoke where all the songs were going to be Prince and it was like Prince fans, I would do Another Lover, Hole in Your Head.
Ooh, good choice.
If you could have 5 minutes with Prince, what would you say or do?
Oh, shame on you. That's a terrible question. I can't answer that. I'd probably be screaming the whole 5 minutes. Like, I'd just totally turn into a stan and just scream. And I think I would be starstruck. I don't think I'd be able to get anything out. It's like I'm getting goosebumps.
I know exactly what I would ask him. And there's this clip on the YouTube where James Brown is performing and he calls up Michael and then he calls up Prince.
Listeners, I have to cut in here and describe the video in all its archival glory. Mind you, this was 1983, after the success of 1999, but before Purple Rain. Prince was 25 years old. So Prince answers the call of his hero, James Brown, and arrives on stage carried on the back of his very tall bodyguard. The purple one tosses his gloves into the audience, grabs a guitar from one of the band members, and confers briefly with them before improvising the kind of bluesy funk riff that belongs perfectly with a James Brown jam session. Prince then takes off his shirt, pays homage to the James Brown mic stand kick shimmy before letting out a very Prince yowl. Then he moves to the edge of the stage, points into the crowd, then pantomimes he wants everyone to clap on the beat. The drummer matches his rhythm. Now Prince has James Brown's audience and band under his command.
I want to know how nervous he was when he got on stage. What did he say to the band before he started playing? I want the breakdown that day.
I love that that's where you would go. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to get goosebumps and all that. I'm not going to do that. I only have 5 minutes. Hey. I need to get to it.
Wow. Okay.
That's what she said.
We are not going to shame anybody for their responses to 5 minutes with Prince.
Sorry. Rashad want to catch me outside. It's okay.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
As I did with Mickey and Rashad, I asked each of our guests on this podcast the same question. If you had 5 more minutes with Prince, what would you say or do? So as we end this season, I want to share those answers as a way of celebrating Prince's life and legacy. Take a listen to Susan Rogers, Kat Okadeyi, Patrice Rushen, Anil Dash, Lene Denise, Alicia Garza, and Owen Husney.
"5 minutes is a short time. I'd want to know what he thinks of himself in terms of his place as an American musician. I think he's important to the history of black music in America, which is essentially the history of American music. I'd like to know how he sees himself as fitting in to this great body of work that we've accomplished. We, people of this country, have accomplished and have sent out to the rest of the world. I'd like to know what he thinks of himself in that way, and if he recognizes what his contribution actually was for others and the many, many musicians who followed in his footsteps.
I would want to know, did he ever feel lonely? To operate and to be that prolific as an artist, there's a lot of isolation, I think, that goes into it, especially when you don't have to rely on other musicians and instrumentalists because you have all of these, like he has all of these gifts, which means that, you know, he could stay in his home studio forever. And we knew that he would spend hours and days even in his studio just creating by himself. And the beauty of having all of those gifts means that yes, you can create, but it also means a lot of isolation.
Ooh, wow. I probably would ask, what have you learned and what do you want to do now? You know, what's next? And you know what? I would also be in a position to give him a big props through a big hug. The wonderful thing about, obviously, about fame is that you have access to a lot of different kinds of things. I also know that you give up something. It's not as easy as it looks, people. It's not. So for me, that'll just start with a big, old-fashioned, unpretentious hug.
Can we ever see you work in the studio? Or how do you see somebody who's the best that's ever done it do it? I'd want to see him work. The thing he was gifted at, that he could do better than anybody else. I want to see that.
I know that he is a beast of a listener. If he had to choose, like, one of the most important albums in his life, what would it be?
What do you think it takes for us to really get free? I probably would have asked him that. Yeah, I definitely would have asked him that.
I have my 5 minutes with Prince twice a month, and it has been since the day he died. At least twice a month, I dream about him. And I wake up and I remember that dream. And we're back, and it's like the old days, and we're hanging together, and we're laughing and making music. Then I'll wake up and I'll say to my wife, well, just had another Prince dream. I wake up with the greatest feeling. And that's all I want to take away from that. That's all I want to take away are those days and the way we were together.
Death and loss hit us all differently, no matter how close or far. Witnessing grief makes many of us uncomfortable, and expressing it requires us to be vulnerable in ways we may not know how to be. That's part of the reason I hesitate to share how deeply I've been affected by the loss of Prince. If I reveal this vulnerability, will I be safe, or will someone use mockery to cut into the soft underbelly of my emotions? So, what would I do with my 5 minutes with Prince? I would ask him what the music looked like in his mind when composing. Did it have color? Did it move in waves? Then I would ask him to tell me about one of the love songs he never released because it felt too revealing at the time. And before he went back to wherever he is, I'd ask him to hold my hand while I cried a little bit. I have 2 Prince tattoos and want more. I have dyed my hair purple a few times. My cat's middle name is one of Prince's aliases. Shout out to Calliope Jamie Star Feline. I learned how to fake orgasms by listening to songs like International Lover and the B-side Girl. After I heard the song The Ballad of Dorothy Parker, I went to the library and looked up the writer Dorothy Parker, and her work changed the way I write poetry. If I ever sat you down and played If I Was Your Girlfriend for you, it meant I loved you. I wrap my love in purple because that's how it was given to me. From Prince, I learned to find peace in establishing boundaries while breaking others. I learned creativity goes through many phases and you can try many things, and if only you are happy with the results, that's good enough. Prince taught me the power of desire and to release shame. And he taught me to fight for myself because I know what's best for me. Prince's legacy is more than just good music. He left behind a blueprint of self-actualization. No one will ever be Prince again. But if you want to follow in his footsteps, you can be fully yourself. This season, we were able to hear from so many incredible people in Prince's life and from those who were affected by his music. I think it makes sense to hear from the legend himself. Prince was a man of few words and rarely spoke in superficial sound bites, but when he did speak, he was genuine, thoughtful, and unhurried. In July 1997, Prince gave a press conference at the Millennium Hotel Broadway in New York City. Prince's hair was cut into a short bob and parted down the middle with deep gold highlights. His name was still love symbol number 2. The reporter asked Prince what he ultimately wanted to achieve at this point in his career.
I was asked this last night. It's a good question I ask myself
that question constantly. I've been blessed with a lot of things that have happened to me, and I don't feel that I'm not deserving, because I worked really hard for it, for everything that I've gotten. But at the same time, you know, at the end of the day, you know, all you can hope is that you've done God's will. And that's all I strive to do now. And I'm trying to be at peace inside.
Right now, are you at your best as a musician in Belgium?
I think so, yeah.
The Prince mixtape is produced by CNN Audio and Pineapple Street Studios. It's hosted by me, Nicole Perkins. Special thanks to all of our guests this season for sharing their memories of Prince with me. Mickey Cheek, Anil Dash, Lene Denise, Marie France, Alicia Garza, Owen Husney, Stacia Lang, Rashad Mobley, Chris Moon, Kat Okadeyi, Susan Rogers, and Patrice Russian. Our producers are Emmanuel Hapsis, Beandria July, and Natalie Brennan. Our managing producer is Aaron Kelly. Our editor is Darby Maloney. Mix and original music by Hannes Brown. Our head of sound and engineering is Raj Makija. And our assistant engineers are Sharon Bardalis and Jade Brooks. At CNN, our senior producer is Felicia Patinkin, and our executive producer is Abby Fentress Swanson. Nicole Pesaru and Jameis Andrus designed our artwork. Executive producers for Pineapple Street Studios are Gabrielle Lewis, Barry Finkel, Jenna Weiss-Berman, and Max Linsky. Special thanks to Noah Camuso, Hannah Park, Katie Hinman, Tamika Balance-Kolosny, Sonia Tun, Chip Grabo, Anissa Gray, Frank Lomonti, Steph Garrett, Graham Duda, Andrea White, Lindsay Abrams, Robert Mathers, Lisa Namoro, Kira Posey, Jane Drinkard, Liz Boyd, John Dianora, and Dina Kleiner.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.